Fascia is an absolutely amazing system. Years ago, most people didn't know what fascia was. Where today, if you're in the health, wellness, and fitness industry, most know what this term means. Hi, my name is Deanna Hansen. I am the founder of Fluid Isometrics and Block Therapy.
And my name is Quinn Castellane. I'm the VP of Block Therapy and Deanna's nephew. Welcome to the Fascia Masters podcast.
Fascia is the connective tissue that holds our entire body together. The fascia system is involved in every aspect of your health, from pain, size and shape, how you age, athletic performance and recovery, and even managing trauma and emotions. The list goes on. When you learn how to decompress your fascia, you experience incredible changes to every level of your being.
The Fascia Masters podcast discusses everything fascia and is dedicated to empowering you with the knowledge you need to become your own self-care advocate. In this episode, we explore how early life trauma triggers a freeze response in the body, contrasting its implications with those experienced later in life. We also dive into anxiety and how to view this sensation from a different lens and to understand it is a language of the cell. Most importantly, we share how to move past trauma responses and anxiety through a number of ways, and most importantly, through connecting with your conscious breath. So sit back and relax and enjoy this episode. Welcome to another episode of the Fascia Masters podcast. Today we're going to be talking about trauma and the impact that has on mental health. And as we know, the mind, the body, the breath, we can get into like the spiritual, it's all connected. So if we have had traumatizing events in the past, or we're going through a trauma in the moment, how that can impact your mental health, and what can we do to help release trauma from the body, which helps release trauma from the mind, from all layers of the being, so that we can move past these traumas and just feel more free on the other side. So when we're talking about mental health, how do you see trauma impacting the mind? Like if anybody, and sure, mental health is a massive subject within itself, and I think we all experience this to some degree, some more than others, and in completely different ways and realms. But how can we, like, initially, how do you think that traumas actually affect mental health?
So the very first thing that happens with pain, fear, or stress is we reactively hold the breath. As soon as we are not breathing properly through the diaphragm, we connect ourselves to a frequency in the brain that is fear-based. It's thinking of thoughts of the past and experiences, and then being afraid of the future, none of which is real. False energy acting real. So that's what trauma does, whether physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, all trauma, because all pain, fear, and stress, we have that initial reaction. And there's a purpose for that. You know, when we hold the breath because we're being confronted with danger, then we end up producing adrenaline and other hormones to give us opportunities in the moment to deal with whatever that situation is. However, if we are chronically stuck in that breathing pattern, and then we grow from that pattern going forward, now we lock that trauma, that experience, into our cells. And as time goes on, the body becomes denser and denser and denser, pushing that trauma further and further inside the body. So it's in there still. So then we have these moments where, like PTSD, where suddenly I can get triggered. And it's like I'm reliving that trauma all over again because it was never properly released. Like the deer who survives the attack and shakes. Right. We freeze. And then again, if it happens when we're a child, if it happens when we're an adult, that will impact us very differently. Because if we strangle our breath when we're 3 years old from something that happened and we don't release that, now we're growing from that place of less oxygen to allow us to grow properly and develop as we should. And again, the earlier it starts, the denser we become. So then the density of the body is impacted constantly when we have those early traumas in life.
So really, dealing with trauma comes down to just how you're able to release it pretty well either in the moment, but also through the breath.
Yeah.
And then if it's trapped in the body from a previous event, you have to release it from a physical form because it is literally trapped in the body. So do a lot of people believe, and I'm not saying this in a negative connotation at all, but that trauma is more of like a mental component. It's more of a cognitive component.
Well, it's both, but I think the challenge we've had,
or is the brain like the byproduct of what's happening to the body?
Absolutely. Yes. It's your brain is a computer that is given information by your cells. Mm-hmm. And if you have cells that are blocked and replaying this same scene over and over again, your brain doesn't know the difference. Is it, you know how we've talked before, if you're watching a scary movie or you're actually having a scary event, your brain doesn't really decipher the difference.
100%.
So when these memories come up from past, because we haven't released it from the cellular memory, then we literally can get thrown back into that moment and you can be as traumatized as when that actual event happened because you keep 100%. Reliving it.
100%. That's so accurate. And that's why it's very important to, well, it's funny because movies are an emotional experience. There's some sort of theme behind it or a genre behind it. There could be a comedy. There could be a horror film. There could be a romantic comedy. There could be a thriller. Like, they're all meant to bring you through an emotional journey. And I think there's pros and cons to that because you can watch a terrifying movie. Like when you and I watched a scary movie, I came out with a really bad headache because I was like, it's like I was there living it. I was experiencing it. And I'm fairly sensitive. So what, like when I'm invested in a movie, like I feel like I'm kind of part of it. That's why I try to steer away from horror films or scary movies because like I come out of it worse than when I came in. So I think the point is we have to be really conscious of what we're watching, what we're listening to. Like all these things have an impact because it's all a frequency and it's all in how you react to it. Because you're absolutely right. There's no difference really between if I were to get attacked by, I don't know, let's just say a lion to make it simple. And it's like traumatizing. It's scary. You're in full-blown fight or flight. Like you are in a full sympathetic state and you are running for your life. But if you are watching a film or something like that similar is happening and you are feeling that similar emotion, like your body is releasing the same chemicals as if you were actually there. So your body is responding to something that isn't actually real to you. It's literally you're viewing this through a lens and you're taking in the emotional impact and that's affecting you physically, biologically, mentally, emotionally. Yeah. So if you have these traumas that are stored in your body, and there's times where like we all have traumas and I think back on something, like I'm thinking back on something from 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and all of a sudden I go like, and then like my heart just starts going like this. And then I have like this weird like feeling in my gut and I'm like, what is happening? I think if we can become aware of that right in the moment when that triggers, to focus on the breath or jump to the block, get the breath going, decompress, really actively release that with specific intention, that's a powerful way to try to at least nip it at the bud in a sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think really the body is designed to thrive and survive. And the body is always wanting, I believe, in its most internal state to take us in the direction of improved health. So when these moments, as you say, come up and suddenly there it is, that gives us the opportunity to finally confront that dragon and realize, okay, I'm safe right now. And that's the big thing for people that are traumatized. They don't feel safe. They don't feel safe in their body. They don't feel safe in their space. And that's a big piece, which is why community is so important, especially helping people guide through it. Because as soon as you know that, you know, I've been there, I've done this, it's helped.
You're not the only one going through it.
Yes, it's a game changer in how people trust a process and respond to that process and even apply that process, right? Because yeah, like I would be, let's say you have a really traumatic injury to your physical body and you're scared to touch it. Yet if you are shown by other people, you know what, when you actually apply pressure to this in the moment, those pressure fibers override the pain fibers, it starts to feel better, you start to heal inside your body. But when you see something or you feel something really painful and your mindset is, oh my gosh, put it over there, I don't want to deal with it, you know, it can be scary, but yet other people show you the way. And that's why it's so important, again, to have community, because that's what it's all about. No different than the rib releases, right? Like in the beginning, people are like, oh my gosh, I don't want this rib release. Now people in our community are like, I haven't had a rib release yet. When am I going to get one? Because on the other side of it, right, there's so many gifts to it.
Interesting. Yeah.
So the thing is, we want to teach people how to feel safe within themselves. And when we have that upper chest breath, we're trapped in a fear response. So just by bringing that understanding of that letting go through that diaphragm, you turn on that parasympathetic nervous system, you bring yourself into that state of calm and relaxed, and then you can approach what is going on from a place of conscious intention and awareness.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It's funny because as you mentioned the community piece, once you hear that other people have gone through similar events or experiences and that they've been able to actively work through that and even be on the other side of that trauma, it reminds me of like the 4-minute mile. It's like nobody believed that they could run a mile in 4 minutes or less, and they couldn't. But as soon as one person did it, then all of a sudden all these other people are running a 4-minute mile. So I guess the whole point of that comparison was, once you see other people doing it, it gives you so much hope, and it's just a whole energetic thing where now you believe in yourself. Now you believe that you can overcome these traumas. If this person did it and all these people in the community have done it, then I can do it too. What were the steps that you needed to do it, to get through that trauma, to release it from the body? So that's the power of the community.
It is. And I was so excited yesterday. I interviewed Jodine McCormick. The podcast will probably be shared by the time this one comes out. And I was so excited because she had shared that she had a really, really horrendous fall, broke ankle, tibia, more than that even. And then, you know, that affected, it basically stopped her massage career. And then later on, she ends up in this car accident and she ends up like, you know, concussion, broken everything, herniated discs in her neck, like just completely sideswiped her. And she's a mom. So now how are we relating to our family when we're in this state? That would be traumatizing to the child as well. Here you have your mother who's healthy and active and then suddenly changes. So not only does the trauma affect our own personal being, but it also affects every single person around you because we're energetic, magnetic beings, right? What was so fascinating and exciting, and this is just the power of these conversations, it was day 7 of the sampler program, and she woke up and she had no pain, just using the towel. So from that level of physical, and as soon as she shared that with me, I was shocked. I love getting shocked, you know, because it's so exciting to actually hear these things. And I mentioned, like, not everybody will have that same experience. However, she had that experience. So now she's a teacher and she's sharing, you know, this understanding with the people in her community that she can reach. So that is why it's so important for us to be able to talk freely about the things that scare us, about the things that we might feel ashamed of or ugly about, because as soon as you do, you let it out of this trappings of your intellectual mind, and that's connected to your fascia. When you combine that with the physical releasing, with the ability to exhale properly, then we can truly make those steps to gaining freedom inside ourselves and truly healing.
Yeah.
And then you can even go back and you can perceive that event from a different lens.
Yeah.
And then it's amazing when you think of timelines, right?
Continue. I don't want to interrupt.
Yeah. But when you think of timelines and then you're like, okay, so this event happened when I was 5, for example, but yet maybe you'll see the gifts instead of the negatives. And then suddenly you're grateful for that. I mean, like she even said that. She's like, wow, like it's not like I would want to do that to myself again, but it led me here. You know, so now you can look back at this moment
look
and
at the
say,
silver lining.
Yes.
That's a very important mindset. And that's what you taught me when I was going through a lot of my traumas. And it's funny because a lot of traumas can be very like personal,
yeah,
based off of each individual. And I was kind of thinking back on some of mine from a positive light, at least. And I'm like, why did that happen to me? And I'm like, why is this happening to me? Why? Whatever. And then I reframe it in a way where I know that it actually made me a way better person based off of the outcome. And it can be really tough to see that in the moment. And again, like I'm not going to get specific with this, but anyways, point being was, if you can reframe a trauma, that alone takes a lot of awareness. But if you can do that, then you're just going to, every time you think of it, you're going to think of it from more of a positive light or a positive perspective, then it's not going to physically or mentally harm you as much. So I want to talk a little bit about anxiety, because anxiety is like a massive, massive subject nowadays. Yeah. And anxiety is obviously different person to person. And I'm not going to say I'm any expert in anxiety, but I think we all experience anxiety to some extent, and how to deal with it. So when somebody, let's say I were to come to you and say, yeah, like I suffer with anxiety or like chronic anxiety, what is the first thing that you would tell me to do to help overcome this?
First, understand, just like pain, anxiety is a sensation that gives that our cells give us to realize or recognize that some part of the body needs some assistance, some guidance. And if right off the hop, we look at it that way and we don't say, I have anxiety, I have cells that are anxious, like that,
or
in itself,
I experience anxiety, or I am experiencing anxiety, I don't have anxiety.
Yeah, like putting it outside of yourself so you can look at it from the lens instead of like owning it, because it's not yours to own. It's simply your cell saying, hey, mom or dad, you know, I'm trying to do the job of making you healthy and you're squishing me. I like the analogy we've talked about, and you'll relate to this very specifically, is the elevator. You know, so like if I'm standing in the elevator and there's room comfortably for 10 people, but there's 15 people in there and somebody's talking really, really loud, and somebody has, like, I'm not fond of the smell of perfumes, like offensive perfume, and I'm trapped. Like, I can tell you, getting out of there, I'm going to be an anxious mess.
Yeah.
And if I'm in there for a long time, I'm going to be even more of an anxious mess, because it adds up. It adds up. As soon as you get out, you're like, oh my God, thank God. Right.
Yeah.
But if that's how you live all the time, then imagine how you would be. So now here's your cell that's, you know, needing its space. It needs space in and around to do its job. But yet I'm sitting here, I'm compressed, I'm squishing it. So the cell is like anxious, 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 because it's trying to do the job and yet it's being compressed. So now it's dirty, it's hungry, it's exhausted, it's dehydrated, yet it's still that little cell going, hey, I'm going to keep working until I can't, but it's giving you information. So when we can look at the language of the body, the language of the cell, not be afraid of it, because it's not going to say, oh my gosh, I need you to change, I'm going to make you feel amazing. If it feels amazing, we're not going to change anything. So the body is, it has these beautiful messages to give us information to pay attention to something. But then what do? We don't pay attention. We take an Advil, or we posturally avoid it, or we ice it, or whatever. We numb it, we freeze it. And then the more we do that, it's still going to start speaking. So it's going to get a little louder, a little louder. The condition that we think is something I have is going to get worse, because the cell is knocking on your door saying, hey, hello, like, please pay attention to me.
Right.
And then eventually it gets shut right off and we can't even hear it, because it has no voice left, because it's literally compressed and shut down. And that's, again, when I see we can like really get into issues where we start really having dis-ease in the body, whatever that may look like. So to be able to recognize the language of the cell, and to be able to have an opportunity to give the cell what it's asking for, which is space, which is breath, which is life, which is nutrition, which is rest, all the things that we're supposed to do anyway. You know, this isn't rocket science. It's like, okay, like get a good night's sleep, drink enough water every day, breathe diaphragmatically, be kind. you know, like all the things that we just really should be doing anyway. It's getting back to the basics.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And almost the solution to nearly everything, and I'm saying this from my understanding, is going back to the basics. Even if you're listening to, I know I bring up Brian Johnson or Gary Brecka, like Gary Brecka will say, go back to the basics of the most basics, which is ground yourself every day by walking on earth barefoot, get sunlight, and then get oxygen.
Yeah.
It's like, do proper breathing stuff. So I'm not saying that's necessarily him quoting that's a solution to like overcome anxiety. He was just saying general health, improving general health. But it's all part of the same thing. It really is. So I find that there's obviously different kinds of anxiety. I can experience anxiety from eating certain foreign foods where my body's just like not happy with that. That had a lot of industrial seed oils or
but wasn't
a
that
lot
good?
Of gluten.
Because now you know, right? Like you tried it and you're like, oh, okay. Diarrhea the next morning or abdominal cramps or...
No, I literally feel anxious in the moment, like when I eat it. And obviously like the gut, we talk about the gut brain connection and how mass majority of your serotonin is stored in the gut. So if something's wrong there, is the communication highway to the brain is telling you that something ain't right.
But that's the point though.
Yeah,
like you ate it, your body didn't like it, it gave you the message, okay, anxious or whatever it is. So if you keep doing it, that's on you.
Totally.
For the consequence, right?
Yeah.
But at least it's speaking to you because it's saying, hey, this doesn't feel good in me. If you keep doing it, there's going to be negative results. So I'm going to let you know now so you don't do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think differences between anxieties that you can feel more in the moment from exactly that example to be worrying about a future event, because they say anxiety is more connected to the future, depression is more connected to the past. And there's so many discussions on like just depression in general and how you're just in a depressed state. But anyway, speaking more on anxiety about the future, I think that's really just the whole breath thing or reframing it. So I think if you're managing your breath diaphragmatically, that immediately changes so much. But then reframing it in your brain, because now you're from more of a logical perspective on it. Because if I'm like, oh, I have this interview. Oh, I have this interview. Oh, I have to like, I'm a guest on a podcast. And like, it's a week in advance and I'm already anxious about it. It's like, why are you anxious about it? So like, sit with your breath. Try to understand why you're anxious about it, break it down, and then work through those steps of what you just broke it down to. If I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to be talking about. What if there's a question that they ask that I don't know the answer to? What if I stutter? What if I say the wrong thing? Like all of these things, like break it down and then just get very clear with what your message is going to be. And that can go for anything.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on that? Like your thoughts on, if there's a future event, you're anxious about it. Let's say you have social anxiety. You're about to go to an event and you just don't like going out to large events where there could be hundreds of people. How would you prepare yourself to attending that event?
So, you know, athletes do it all the time. You know, they see themselves win the race before they actually have the race. You envision yourself, you know, being the first to cross that finish line, and then you've put it in your mind and now you've magnetized that, because the universe will conspire to give you what you believe. If you believe you're going to win the race, the universe will conspire to do that. If you believe you're going to fail, if you believe you're not good enough to have abundance, if you believe you're not attractive enough to have a wonderful mate in your life, or whatever your mindset is. And that's, again, we've talked about that 95% subconscious mind really creating our reality. That's the thing. So these limiting beliefs, and I mean, they're real, right? Like if you had a sibling that was a bully, or a parent that was like, oh, you're stupid, or oh, you're not good at this, or and then you grow up believing that, then that's your belief system. And so we need to actually understand that that was implanted. It's not real. Somebody implanted that into you. And when you start to really connect to your proper diaphragmatic breath, now you're pulling yourself out of that fear frequency. You're pulling yourself into the frequency of love in the moment, and you start to trust yourself. And it doesn't come without work. You know, if I mean, even when I was, you know, I excelled at school, but in science and math, I didn't excel at writing. then I'm like, okay, I've got something to say. I need to be able to learn how to do this properly. So then I opened it up that I wanted to do it, and then came to me this wonderful opportunity in a way that I would learn how to write, as opposed to me thinking, oh, I've got to do it this way, right? Like, if we want something in our life, believe that it already exists, and then the universe will conspire to give it to you. So we can truly change our perception of life. If I've had a really bad trauma, and I mean, I've had many, you know, for years, I believed I would never find anything good in my life because I was so completely taken away from my higher self. And there was years where I just didn't think I would ever amount to anything. And it was awful because when I was in high school, I was at a private girl's school. I was scholar athlete of the year 1 year. Like I excelled, and then got caught for impaired driving at the age of 17, which derailed me entirely. And suddenly I leave the school 2 weeks before graduation with, you know, rather than being this, you know, elevated performer, now I'm just like the dark cloud over my head. You know, it wasn't handled really great in my family. So suddenly, like, I spiraled very quickly into being the athlete with hope for my future to, you know, gaining 50 pounds, becoming like a recluse almost, because I was just, I mean, it was awful. So it took me a while to move myself through that. But it was when I was 30 and I found my breath that everything started to change. And then I remember when I was 37 years old, I had this beautiful moment, because even as I was awakening, I had a lot of guilt and shame about my actions in my 20s and all of the negative stuff that I did to myself, the behaviors that I had. So there was always this like feeling like that I wanted to shield that from really my life and who I was. And then something happened when I turned 37, and I was able to look at that damaged young woman with such compassion and forgiveness that it completely changed my perception. And I was like, wow, like, because of that person, this is in the world today. Like, that's huge to really reconcile in your mind. You know, because of the death of this person in your past, you awakened and were able to help all these people. Or because of this experience, I was able to connect with different people that were life altering for me. You know, like, there's always that silver lining. And when we can take ourselves out of that patterning of the trauma response, and that has to happen with the breath, then we can start to reframe things. Because if we keep that, you know, like that scared, super shallow breath, we stay locked in. We stay locked in the body, we stay locked in the mind, and then that magnetism that we're exuding is based from that.
And they say the perfect, just to give reference for everyone, they say, like in the breath book, they say the perfect breath is in and out through the nose, obviously. And then it's five and a half seconds in, 5.5 seconds out. And that alone, they said, even if you can breathe like that for a few minutes a day, which is comical because I'm like, I feel like I breathe like that for majority of the day. And maybe I'm not, and I'm just not to that awareness yet, but that alone changes so much in your body, how much more you can bring in the oxygen, how you're using the carbon dioxide to your benefit, and all these other benefits from it. But that alone is huge. And then, okay, you don't know how to access the diaphragm, do the belly position, use the rolled up towel, check it out on our YouTube, just get that breath engaged. And then it's great to be able to explore different areas in the body, because you find where areas are storing trapped anxiety, which is just trapped energy and emotion that you need to release.
And I just want to touch on that a little bit, because I've definitely encountered people that have been so locked away with that diaphragmatic breath that they don't know how. And that's where the process comes in. So if you can't lie on your back, place your hands on your belly and feel the belly become bigger with the inhale, then there's a patterning that needs some time to undo. And that's where working in the extremities is a good place to start. Working between the toes for 3 minutes, changing the patterning of how your feet work, changing the patterning of the hand work, you know, like doing this between the fingers and putting that pressure in. when we start to release the extremities, because they're the strongest holding pattern. Think of what happens when you're afraid or you're angry. We end up clenching fists, bringing them really close to the body. We end up pulling that heart deep inside of us instead of having it nice and strong in the forefront. So if we can't start with the breath because we are so impacted by that trauma response, we can start somewhere else and we can move our way toward it. And that's the beauty of the pain. Because when this whole journey began for me, I was having an anxiety attack and it was terrifying. But I dove my hand into my abdomen, I encountered pain, and the pain grounded me in my body. It took me out of my crazy thoughts and it grounded me right where I needed to be in my tissue. So the pain became the lifeline for me to move through that anxiety and to see it from a different perspective.
Yeah, that's very powerful. Even times where I focus on, like, I think there's so many ways to deal with anxiety. I think a very simple way is what we were just talking about. Decompressing the belly or the extremities, activating the breath, breathing diaphragmatically is like one of the most instantaneous things you can do to help with anxiety. A cold plunge can help with anxiety.
Yes.
Like there's so many different things. Meditate, constant meditation to rewire the brain, because it's, You need to focus on the physical to even help rewire the brain, but you also need to work with your emotions and how you're mentally going to deal with yourself, deal with other people, deal with your own emotions, everything to rewire that in a different way. I hope that made sense. But for me, it was literally, I had to do the daily work to like break through these layers of my subconscious brain and rewire it to more of a positive perspective. And it took me time, but that's where I noticed a very long lasting change. And I was able to overcome a lot of anxieties or traumas, like being in the elevator every single day. When I was on the 29th floor, I would have anxiety like every single time. I've always had fear of elevators. And then I remember after I was meditating for however long that I would like go in the elevator and I was just so calm and just so present in the moment. I just knew nothing bad could happen. And when you're in, it's hard because I'm not in that exact moment right now. I've found like a balance, but that was like a really cool place to be. And at least knowing that I can get there or knowing that that state exists was crazy. So then I didn't have fear of elevators for a very, very long time, but then life can happen and you can fall off the wagon and then it can resurface. But anyways, I think there's so many different ways to deal with anxiety, to deal with traumas. I think these practices that we've communicated about are extremely powerful. There's something that will always help. You can always work through, because there's literally individuals that focus on anxiety by just focusing on the breath. Then others like Joe Dispenza, for example, just focus on rewiring the brain. Then others, that will be more of a physical practice. Okay, do a cold plunge, do a sauna, do different breathing patterns, eat different foods, completely change your diet. There's all these things. So what if we just, like, okay, this is a question for you. What if you're actually overwhelmed with where to start? So what if there are all of these different things you can do? What would you say is like a good starting point?
Got to start with the breath. It's the only way you're going to change the frequency in your brain. And I think I actually didn't answer your question before when we were talking about, it's called top down. So when you take a top down approach to trauma, you're trying to deal with it intellectually. So we take a bottom up approach. You know, we focus on the body. It's all needed. But if you only try to focus on rewiring your brain through your intellectual mind, those patterns of your fascia are far more powerful. The way you're breathing is trapped in that, those adhesions, is far more powerful. That 2,000 pound per square inch force is real. So if we don't release that, we can't change the patterning. You might logically be able to understand it, but did you really bring it into your body so that you don't get still caught up in those trauma responses? You know, it was funny. For years, because of my 20s, when I was a mess, I would feel like if somebody would confront me and say like, hey, I remember you, the first thing I would do is blush, because I'm thinking, oh my gosh, like from where?
Right? Totally. I get that.
What did I do? So blushing became like, I got so strangled in my voice for a while that I was even scared to sit at a table with, you know, three other people and have a conversation. Like I couldn't open my mouth. I couldn't speak. So then, you know, this work starts happening to me and I'm like, geez, I need to be teaching this, but I can't even be at a table and talk without like just going into that response of blushing and feeling terrified. So that was why I actually started the practice of yoga, because I thought I'm a kinesthetic body. I would feel far more comfortable speaking in front of people if I can do it in a physical manner. And so as I'm in this teacher training program, I remember this moment. It was so incredible because, you know, I'm pushing myself in this space to really move through those challenges that I was having. So the teacher asked a question and I knew I had the answer. So I raised my hand. And as soon as I raised my hand, I feel this flush of red, but I consciously exhaled in that moment. And for the first time, I undid the blush. Like I took control of that physiological response that I felt I had no control over, that always made me feel so insecure and scared, because you feel weird when you're blushing, then people look at you, oh, you're blushing, and you blush more and then you're hot. And then you just feel like, okay, the world can see my insecurity, right? So having that moment where through that exhale, I felt like, wow, I moved it out of me instead of like holding it and making it bigger and bigger and brighter.
Can I add to that? Because I think this is really powerful. So let's say in a moment where you are experiencing anxiety. So first thing is do a full exhale, connect to the diaphragm, but then try to become aware of what is causing you this anxiety. Because I think as soon as you can become aware of what it is, you can recognize why you're feeling that way so that you can reframe it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a really powerful way as well. Breath, and then become consciously aware of what is causing that. And that could be anything. It could be the food you're eating. It could be about a future event. It could be about a past event. It could be about whatever.
And that's where forgiveness comes in. You know, like, I mean, I did lots of things mostly to myself that, you know, were awful. But to be able to forgive, because we can't undo what we have done. We can't undo the past. But again, we can look at it from a different lens and we can reframe it. So that ability to forgive yourself or others or all of them, you know, to forgive simply and understand with compassion that, you know, if there was somebody that assaulted you in any kind of way, where were they coming from? You know, what kind of damage have they undergone in their life to have created that kind of negative intention towards another? So when we can, and that's again, the Celestine prophecy, you know, it's, they talk about the parent, and don't blame the parent because they're simply parenting from their parents, from their parents, from their parents. So it's not a blame game. It's an understanding game and saying, okay, you know, just silly little thing. I'm driving home. This is a few months back. I was driving home and I was about to yield and turn onto the other street. And I guess that the car that was coming at me thought I wasn't going to stop, which I was. So then this woman, she turns and she gives me the finger and she's swearing. And so my initial response was like, you know, I wanted to kind of do the same thing back, but I had enough in my mind to say, wow, I bet she's having a really hard day. So, because even the energy we put out, even though she's in a car moving past me, if I did the same thing back to her, then I'm going to actually add more negativity to her energetically. So we don't want to do that. We want to be compassionate. And when somebody isn't acting in the most appropriate manner, there's probably a reason for it. And, you know, if somebody's just that unhappy, they're not having a good moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good point. Okay. Well, what else, anything else that you want to share on this? This is really impactful and there's a lot to this conversation, but sorry, I'll let you talk.
Well, I think the most important thing is because I'm sure there's going to be people listening who are trapped in that moment in themselves and they've probably tried many, many approaches and many things and they might feel defeated because this is a big topic and everybody's traumas are unique to them, but there's also some universal things that are true of everybody's traumas as well. And it could be the big trauma, the little traumas. It doesn't matter if you're impacted negatively, it's tied and stuck in your breath and in your cells. So give yourself the moment to understand that there is a way out and to take those first steps. And if the breath doesn't seem to be the easiest approach to begin with, start with the toes, start with changing the diet, start with, again, as you said, look at what's going on and start somewhere, because just starting with one thing suddenly gives you a little more energy. And then it's like, okay, you know what? Now I can do the next thing and the next thing. We do not have to go from 0 to 100. We just need to be on the right path.
Yeah.
And then every single step changes everything. You know, like I just read on Facebook the other day, just somebody had posted, if you save $8 a day, by the end of the year, you have $3,000. Like $8 a day seems like nothing, right?
Yeah.
But $3,000 is...
That could be a trip.
It can be a trip. It's a lot of money. So that little step every single day, add it up. And then just see where you are and be conscious of, like, journal, because we also forget where we've come from. So many people share
that
photos.
Is very true.
Yeah. Because again, if you have pain and it's always an 8 out of 10, and then, you know, 3 months later, you're a 6 out of 10, you might be thinking, well, I still have pain. Well, okay. But
you still might associate the 6 with an 8.
Yeah. And what other benefits are you experiencing? Do you have a little more energy? Are you sleeping better? Are you able to walk up the stairs with greater ease? Look at those little wins and see them as the big win, because every one of those little things is a huge win.
They are.
When I was working with a quadriplegic, 25-year-old gentleman broke his neck, and I had the conversation with him. I said, you know, what do you miss most? And I was expecting at age of 25, a guy to say, oh, I can't be intimate with my girlfriend, or like, play football or whatever it was. And he said, I can't make myself a sandwich. Like, that broke my heart, because to anybody that has normal physical mobility, that's not even something you think about as being a gift. Yet it's a huge gift to the person that can't do it for themselves. So those little wins, they keep adding up. So pay attention to those, write them down. And when you're feeling defeated, look back and say, oh, you know what? I was over here. Now I've moved a little bit. And just keep going. Just start. Just keep going.
Love that. And a couple other things that came up when you're just chatting there. A big thing I learned is when you live in gratitude, you cannot live in anxiety. If you're truly living in gratitude, though, you can't just necessarily say, like, I'm thankful for Deanna. I'm thankful for this house. I'm thankful for my girlfriend. I'm thankful for the food that I have to eat. Like, you have to really feel it.
Yeah.
And that's totally different than just like a quick prayer or a quick affirmation or whatever it is. Gratitude is really an emotion. So you can't speak the emotion, you have to feel the emotion. And when you can really feel it, then it's really hard to feel anxious. So that was one point. Another point is, I didn't realize I was always anxious as a kid growing up. And I didn't even know what anxiety was. I had literally... Didn't even hear that term until I was probably like 15 years old. And then I started to understand it more and more. But when I've talked to other people, other professionals, they're saying, don't mix up anxiety with excitement. You're really excited. You're here to do something. You're here to share something. You're excited about your life, but you're also a perfectionist. You also want things to go in a particular way. So when you can even just reframe it from that perspective, because excitement and anxiety share very similar emotions. And when you can just do a quick little spin, again, I'm not saying this is like the ultimate fix, but it's a quick little spin that you can do where it's like, no, I'm actually just really excited about this. Cause I would always have this anxiety, quote unquote anxiety or excitement within myself. I always wanted to be a perfectionist, and I didn't realize that, sure, it got a little too far on the negative side where it was starting to physically harm me. But when I was able to reframe it, then actually work from it from a certain point, then things just completely changed.
Yeah. One other thing I'd like to share is, and this may feel like a stretch for a lot of people, it's easy to be grateful for those who give us joy and support our life. It's a very different thing to be grateful for the people that we feel have harmed us. So if we can actually do that, place the intention of the, like, think of the person, if you think, okay, anxiety, who comes into your mindset, give them love instead of, oh, I don't like you. I don't want any good to happen to you. Like, whatever you know, whatever it is,
yeah.
or I want the same thing to happen to you that you did to me. Reframe that. That's the challenge. And I believe if people can actually love who has shown only that negative, that's again, the Celestine prophecy, where we elevate ourselves above that patterning of energy in relationship. And I think truly when you can get to that point, you can really start to see some changes really quickly.
Because we're really just a reflection. Like everything is just a reflection of ourself.
Yeah.
And that could be part of like the Celestine prophecy, but I've also heard this from other experts in the energetic world. And like everything is energy. So whatever you put out, you're going to come back. And whatever you've experienced is because you've likely put it out there.
Yeah.
So I think that's another perspective to reframe that. Like, why would I want to be grateful for somebody that has harmed me? Because there's some very terrible people out there and that have done very terrible things. And it can be feel very far stretched to try to like...
Have compassion.
Right.
Yeah. No, and I get it. I mean, it's an exercise. Start the gratitude on the simple things, but see if you can do that, and then see what happens. Because again, everything's energy. So if I hate you because you've hurt me, now I'm actually just adding more of that hate and hurt back into my life. So always think of it from that perspective. Am I going to keep harming myself because I won't forgive you? Just because I forgive somebody doesn't mean that I want them ever in my life again.
Right.
But I can forgive them because I'm doing it for myself. Yeah. Otherwise, if I'm going to be resentful and like gnawing on that bone, like that's just going to keep me down. And so always look at it from that God space within yourself. Like let's heal ourselves by just sending out love and whatever that looks like. And maybe it's just writing down a name and circling it with a heart and saying, I love you. I love you. Like as far-fetched as that can be, suddenly you soften and you let go of that energy that's connected to it. And you feel a little bit lighter and you can take a bit of a deeper breath and so on and so on.
Yeah. There's a lot of little anxieties that have been going on in my life in this particular moment in time. A lot with work, a lot on the personal side, a lot on this side, whatever. And I had to do that. I'm like, okay, there's going to be some uncomfortable conversations I'm going to need to have. And they're like, so that was one perspective. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, like I could avoid this and keep pushing it off and have this little anxiety stored there for however long I want it to stay there. Or I can just say, Quinn, have the conversation, get it over with, approach it from the perspective of love. And then see what happens. As soon as that conversation happened, oh,
yes.
Wow, I feel so much better.
Right.
Okay, what's the next? Okay, well, I'm anxious about this next thing. How can I feel less anxious about this situation? And I just kind of, that's where I do use a little bit more of the logical brain. Like, how can I break this down to overcome this? And then that has worked very, very well. In addition. So there's all these little things where sometimes you just need to approach them head on, positive or negative. Again, looking at the things that are negative, send it love, have that conversation, come from a pure intention, and then you slowly get rid of them one at a time. And that's great because all these little ones that just these little anxieties from all different realms, not just from conversations or from this or from that, from all these different realms can attack you and just eat away at you. So you have to start releasing them one at a time. And even if you just start by engaging the breath, working in the extremities, changing your food, whatever, then you become more aware of what are the actual triggers to my anxieties. What is actually causing me anxiety? Then kind of work with those individually and overcome them. If that's what is contributing to your anxiety.
And I think most importantly, if anyone's listening and you can't wrap your head around any of these things, go to the Block Therapy private Facebook community group and ask for help. Mm. It's beautiful. The support in the community, if you share there, you're going to get sent a ton of love. You're going to get sent a ton of understanding, compassion, and support. And it's a place to start.
And you're not alone.
You're not alone.
Nobody's alone. Deanna and I have gone through a lot of crazy shit. A lot of weird stuff.
Yep.
Like, it's not easy.
No. life is not easy.
It's very, very difficult. And I think that wraps it back to the whole community thing that you mentioned. And that's a really important thing. So I think that's a great suggestion. And just to find that group is in Facebook, type in Block Therapy Community. You'll find it, ask for access. You'll be granted in. And that's a great place to start. Yeah. So there's a lot of ideas. Again, don't expect that you're going to figure it out overnight. It's a work in progress. We're still a work in progress. Everybody's a work in progress. But then when anxiety, what's so great about this, when you work on yourself so much, when other traumas happen in the moment, you deal with them. You don't store them.
Yes.
Similar with anxieties. You can deal with them in the moment. You know how to work through it because you have experience. You have wisdom. You can look at it from a different lens, almost from an omniscient perspective. And then that's when you feel really empowered.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, let's wrap it up.
All right.
Cool conversation. Very important conversation because yes. We all have this to some degree. And thank you very much for tuning in. And you can check out more information on our YouTube channel to get started with the breath and a lot of the work that Deanna and I were communicating about. Again, join the Facebook community group, ask any questions that you have, and it's a great place to be. So thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you in next week's episode.
Thanks, everyone.